Hi, this is Russ from episode 42 with a special announcement. Do you want to meet John Hamer, Lindsay Hansen-Park, John Delan, and Seth Bryant? Those four and many more will be presenting at Sunstone Toronto on April the 8th, 2017. Join us for the first Canadian event of this kind. Go to sunstonetoronto.com for more information and to register.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Project Zion. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
Welcome to another episode of the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Mangelson, and today I am really, really excited for this interview. It's something that I've been wanting to do for months and months and months, but we have on Noelle Gafka, who is a 70 from Michigan on, and we are going to chat about dance as a spiritual practice. And so welcome, Noelle.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness. I am just as excited as you are to be here. I know we first started talking about coming together on the podcast maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And it was a different topic at the time. And when this one came up and you sent me the message that, hey, we need to talk about dance, and it was a no-brainer. Like, yes, we need to do this. So thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. And I do think that there's a lot of discussions and topics that we could have and explore. But this one, when I decided that I wanted to do an episode about dance, there was only one person in my mind to have on. So that was you.
Thank you.
I know. I'm excited. So how about, can you give us just a brief introduction to yourself? For those of us who might not be Facebook stalking you constantly like I am.
Well, some people know me as Kurt's mom, but yes. For those who don't, as you shared, I'm a 70 here in Michigan, and I have been dancing since I was 2.5 years old. Well, actually a little bit before then, because I could not stop twirling in grocery stores in their aisles. And so my mom was inspired to see if I wanted to try dance. And with that, well, I just exploded. But my history with the church, grew up in the church. I worked for the church for just a little while. It was an absolute honor. Worked with the Mission Center here in Michigan and worked with the USA Field. But now I get to explore volunteer ministry, and it's such a blessing to continue on being a part of the church and being a part of a church who understands the need for spiritual practices and centering. So I'm excited that we are a faith who can look at dance and not see it as an extracurricular activity, but something that is essential to our whole being.
I love that. And for me, just to give, a quick background of my dance experience, it sounds a lot like you. I was twirling from the time I could walk, and my mom had already put my older sister in dance classes. And so when I came along 4 years later, it was just kind of a no-brainer that she pushed me alongside too. So I started at 3, but I never connected dance and church necessarily. I did dance with the program that I danced with growing up. It was at BYU, so there definitely was a churchy aspect to it. But I'm really excited because I never necessarily viewed dance as a spiritual practice, and so I'm excited to dive into this topic with you.
I'm the exact same way. It wasn't until I was an adult that I was able to connect dance with the spirit, because before it was just something that you did. You went to class. You would perform in recitals sometimes. somebody might say, hey, could you do a dance during church worship? I'm like, all right, fine. Yep, that's cool. And then you would do that. But now as an adult, looking back and being able to connect the spirit to dance is a beautiful sensation.
Exactly. So I just want to note real quick, Noelle and I, we have talked about this for the last little while, and we just want to make it known that dance in Community of Christ has kind of a complicated history, and we both realize that we don't really know that history as well as we would like to. But I do know that dance was at one point on one of the old preaching charts. I think the preaching chart was from 1912. So we're talking way back, where it was actually, you know, written out as part of the broad way, which is, you know, in counter to the narrow way. And so I hope that we have maybe moved beyond those, you know, prejudices, I guess. That might be a strong word, but this idea that dance is somehow counter to the spirit or counter to the gospel. But I hear that the history with Community of Christ, RLDS, just the restoration in general, and dance is quite entertaining and interesting. So that's something that I am looking forward to learning more about. But I just wanted to kind of, I don't know, maybe do a little disclaimer that hopefully this isn't an uncomfortable topic for people. but if it is, then I acknowledge the historical, complicated, I guess, relationship with dance and the church.
Absolutely. And sometimes we think about this. You mentioned the word uncomfortable. Sometimes we are challenged to be uncomfortable in order to understand and in order to fully embody the holy. So if this is uncomfortable, maybe it is in a way that will allow us to open further to the spirit and to be able to grasp a new understanding of movement as a whole.
Exactly. So let's just dive right on in and talk about what is dance. I kind of have my own thoughts on it, but I'd like to just throw it right to you, Noelle, and see what your kind of overall definition of dance is.
Well, I do think for the rest of this podcast recording, we need to use only dance terms. So we can't dive in. We need to leap in or maybe trot in or twirl in. What are those? I'm just joking there.
Oh. We could do this. I like it. Jeté on in.
Oh, my understanding of dance is very, very basic. It is simply movement, any type of movement. And from there, I mean, that is the foundation that I see dance as. And then you start to add different things such as movement to rhythm, movement to the way that the earth moves, movement to complicated music patterns. I mean, it keeps going and it keeps building upon that. But the essential foundation of dance is simply just to move, to allow ourselves to flow, if you will, to just breathe. Even breathing can be considered dancing. It is when we start to break it apart and when we start to add barriers to dance is when we start to say, I can't do that. So often we say dance is something that people who train in that field or train in that category does. It's not me. Or sometimes we say, I can't dance because I'm not coordinated. It is us who puts up those walls. We put up those barriers. We define what dance is. But if we're able to break it down to the foundation of movement, then we find that we are dancing at every single moment of every day, simply by just being.
It's beautiful. I remember in high school, my dance coach, she had us all meet together at lunch, and we walked around just the school and just kind of creepily observed various groups and conversations happening. And just to watch how much people dance just in conversation, just in eating. I mean, just the fact of, you know, walking to your class, your arm is swinging, your feet are turned out or turned in a certain way, or, you know, there's so many different dance elements in just existing. So I love that you brought up the fact that it's when we break that down and we put the I can't in front of it, that we assume that dance is something that it's not. So I really, really appreciate that. And so I guess what are ways then that we can incorporate dance into our worship? And I know this is a huge, I mean, we're going to be talking about this throughout the episode. But so what ways, I guess, in your personal life, have you been able to implement dance within your own worship?
Well, one of the things that I learned was that we are constantly connected to a creation that is so huge that we have to understand first that we are part of the creation. And with that comes the understanding of how the Spirit is within us and around us. If we are able to embrace the Spirit, then we're able to find the ways to connect with the Holy. But that is a challenge for a lot of people, especially in a world where we have so many distractions, so many advances in technology and social media, and especially if we are compassionate people who really dwell on the struggles of our world, that we can be distracted from the Spirit that is already present. So being able to center and being able to experience the Holy is already present and already moving within us, then creates an ability to experience dance as a personal spiritual practice. So I am one who is an extremely active-minded person. My brain is very abstract. It is constantly moving. So when I first started embracing spiritual practices and when I first started sitting down with different mentors who are teaching me ways to experience the Holy, I struggled horribly when they would share practices such as just being still or finding a way to just sit into the silence. And it was a complication because my brain just works very differently. It's constantly moving. And whether we want to think of it as a chemistry concern or just a part of my generation, I could not do that. So then, as I continued on working with mentors, they started to realize that maybe I needed to move in order to experience the Holy, that maybe we needed to find a different way to center. And with that, they invited me to do something as simple as to just stand and sway back and forth, shifting weight from one foot to the other. And something as simple as that, I was able to allow my brain to recognize that I was moving, but also to be able to focus on the topic at hand, to be able to focus on the Spirit. And just the simple swaying back and forth, the rhythmic of going from left to right, was able to allow me to open even deeper than before. And then I learned that something as simple as just letting my hand move in front of me. And it can feel a little silly. It can feel like you're conducting an invisible band or an invisible orchestra. But that movement of letting my brain say, okay, I am fluid right now. So now I can focus on other things because my body is moving. And then able to say, God, I know you are present. So after working through those barriers, I started to look at dancing as a spiritual practice even deeper. I started to understand how my brain and body worked, and it allowed me to let go in ways that I thought initially were not proper. I always thought spiritual practices, you had to be still and silent. And I started to realize, wow, God moves, and God moves in the trees, and God moves in the grass, and God moves in ways underneath the soil that we're not even able to see. But God also moves within us as our blood flows and as the oxygen is going through into our fingers and toes. And I started to look at that and I thought, my body is dancing even when I'm not moving, because God is moving through to my joints and to my fingers and toes. And so recognizing the holy as being present, I went, wow, I can just let go and go even deeper. So I started to find ways of accepting movement and learning new movement. And it's trial and error and doing something and going, no, that does not work. I am not experiencing the holy in this moment. Let me try something else. And not giving up until you're able, through movement, to experience the holy. And another thing that I was able to discover through the help of others is understanding that we have a drum that lives inside of us that is constantly drumming, and it is our heart. And one of the reasons that we as a people connect so deeply to music is that the drum inside of us connects to the beat around us. And so experiencing that flow of how we are all connected, I was able to experience the holy in unique ways. And I'm still learning different things. There are times when I can be teaching and I am watching other people dance. I'm not even really moving so much, but I'm watching them move. And in that moment, I can go, oh my gosh, I can experience God right now. I am experiencing the fullness of creation right now just by watching somebody else dance. And it's so profound. And there have been times when teaching, that if I am able to just let go and be a part of the moment without thinking about what steps come next, without thinking about where the music will turn, just trusting that my body is going to move in some way, I have been brought to tears teaching. And I can't begin to tell you how awkward that is. When there are people who, one, have paid to come to a class with you, and now you're standing in front of them, oh gosh, you're so beautiful. And they're like, okay, come on, and we're done here. But it's amazing when you can just let go and stop with the hesitation and stop saying, I can't, that the spirit really moved.
That was all very beautiful. I love that you connected the ways that you encountered God already, just in, you know, general worshipful practices, and then you brought dance into that to enhance it. And it sounds like you really have used dance as a vessel to allow the spirit that room to breathe, and without getting corny, that room to dance. I mean, it really allows for such a free flow of whatever God wants you to feel in that moment. So that's really, really, really beautiful. So I guess my follow-up question with that is, how do you think that the body and the mind and the spirit are all connected? I mean, you went into it a little bit, but do you think that one always impacts the other, or what happens when all three of them are connected?
Amazing things happen when all three are connected. But we have the ability to choose to connect those things. We have the ability to say heart, spirit, limbs, unite, or creation, unite. And when we discover that, then we can go deeper into our understanding of what that is. I mean, such a huge question, because for each of us, it is very different in our relationship with the spirit. I wanted to share this neat section from the Doctrine and Covenants with you that kind of talks about that, from section 90, verse 5e. And this was written in May 4th, 1833. And it says, the elements are eternal, and spirit and element, inseparably connected, receiveth a fullness of joy. And when separated, man cannot receive a fullness of joy. So we are challenged, and even from the time of 1833, are challenged to bring those three together, to bring body, heart, and spirit together, to find that movement.
I love, though, that there is precedence for this in scripture and that it all ties together. And I really think that's part of holistic worship, is this idea that it impacts every aspect of your life. And so you can bring in scripture and dance and body, mind, and spirit, that they are all interconnected. I mean, I'm still new to this whole idea of ministry, but I think that I've seen a change in myself and in my confidence when I can connect all of those. And it's not necessarily that I'm dancing on stage and during a worship service, but any way that I can connect those three, especially, I mean, and I think that with dance too, we've touched on it, but I mean, dance can be body language. And how much does, you know, your conversation enhance and your connection to humanity and to God enhance when you have a firm grip on even something as simple as your body language. So I do think that we're all participating in this without necessarily realizing it or calling it dance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And to add to that, when we talk about worship, sometimes we can get so centered on worship being Sunday morning at 11 a.m., that we forget that we can worship as individuals. We can worship at any time of any day, and experiencing movement in whatever environment that we are in can be worship. And we can be waiting for a bus to pick us up. We can be in our backyard. We can be doing house cleaning. I mean, Mrs. Doubtfire showed us how to dance with a vacuum. We can do it. We can experience movement through all different types of things and say at that time, I am worshiping. So I think that we needed to throw that in there so that those who do relate to worship as being an event that either happens once or twice a week can be able to say, I'm going to give praise and thanksgiving and joy to God right now. Or sometimes we dance during moments of lament, or we move in a way to heal our sad hearts and grieving. And that is still considered worship. So we can move in worship by ourselves.
Exactly. And I think that this all shapes and forms our whole being and how, I mean, if we can connect with the divine, because movement can be very personal, intimate, it can be very vulnerable, especially if we have insecurities about, you know, our body or our abilities, technique, whatever it may be, even if it's something just as simple as swaying to a prayer, you know, something that can just be very, very maybe small in movement, but just big in spirit. I think that the more that we implement these things and the more that we're mindful of them, then it can build our confidence in ways that not recognizing it or just being static wouldn't be able to bring. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just think that it makes us it just brings us to a whole. And I really like that idea.
Yeah. And that brings what you just shared, brought a beautiful image of those who have different type of physical limitations or disabilities, who may have to be seated in either a wheelchair or may have to move by the use of prosthetic limbs or whatever, who say, I cannot dance because my body has these limitations. But if we are able to do something as small as just wiggling our finger and then saying, as we are wiggling our finger, I am going to do this with all of my heart and experience, you know, the fullness of God in this movement of finger. Or maybe we don't have the ability to move our fingers. Even blinking, even just, as I shared before, breathing to say, this is movement. I may not be able to dance like those that I see on stage, or I may not be able to dance like those that I've seen on YouTube. But to acknowledge that we can dance just by blinking and to say God is in this moment, then we can really open ourselves up.
Yeah, I'm even reminded of being in the temple sanctuary in Independence, and all you have to do is look up. And you don't even necessarily have to tilt your head back, you know, depending on where you're at, and you can just casually look up and have this transformative experience. At least it is for me. And if we don't take the moment to look up or to change our perspective, then we could miss it.
Absolutely. And even then, we can acknowledge how the lights are dancing when we look up then.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I've never, I'm having like revelations as we're talking. Like I've never been that intentional or good at naming all the different ways that our bodies just naturally participate in this dance. So I'm learning a lot as we're talking. So I know you shared with me last night that you're reading a book on dance as a spiritual practice. I was hoping to download it, but I had a bunch of seminary stuff to do, so I didn't get a chance to. But I actually, in looking, I looked it up, and it was a book that I saw at the Parliament of the World's Religions that was in Salt Lake a couple of years ago, and I almost picked it up. Yeah, I almost picked it up, but I kind of fell back into that, like, I can't stage. And like I said, I'd never really viewed dance as a spiritual practice, and I don't have access, easy access to a studio. I'm definitely not as flexible or, you know, I don't have those calluses on my feet that every dancer just works so hard to get. I don't really have those anymore, and I really haven't danced for almost 10 years now. And so I just kind of thought, oh, no, I won't get it. So I'm excited that you're reading it, and now it makes me, especially with this conversation, it makes me want to pick it up again. But, anyways, that's just a tangent on my connection to that book. And just the acknowledgement that, yeah, sometimes fear is what holds us back. And, I'm assuming that in that book, you don't, the things that it suggests, you probably don't have to have, you know, a dance studio in your basement with a bar and with mirrors and things like that. But can you talk about that book a little bit or some of the things that you've learned or discovered through reading that book?
Sure. So the book, what I love about it is she writes in a very easy tone. She writes in a way that anybody is able to read it and to process what she's sharing. She writes in a very imaginative way. So I am a person that when I read, I love to be able to explore the different techniques of writing, but sometimes my brain may not be able to process or comprehend very, very technical writing, if you will. So she writes as if she's just having a conversation with you. So one of the things that really stood out to me, I have not made it through the entire book yet, but she talked about, and I have discovered this in my personal life as well, as how to be able to embrace the fact that we all speak dance. And that's kind of a jumbled way to think about it. How can you speak dance? Well, dance and music is a way that connects us across the nations and across the different languages. And when we start to move together, we do not have to translate. We do not have to have someone standing next to us saying, and now she's moving her arm up. And now she's stepping forward. We just acknowledge that we are able to experience the different cultures of dance. And this, the writer is one who has spent time in different cultures, has spent time with Native Americans in the U.S., who has gone to Africa, who spent time in India to say, how do you experience the holy? And it's different for each, different for each religion and culture. How do you experience wholeness and being able to learn how to move with the different cultures, and then to bring that back and to teach it with others, but also understanding that when we move together, when we acknowledge the fact that we are speaking the same language while moving, not only are we building communities, but we are finding that we are becoming family, and how enriched our lives become just because we speak that same language of movement. That was what really stood out to me the most.
Yeah, that's something that I've thought a little bit about. I think that there are several universal languages, but actually not very many. Even music can not be a universal language if there's words to music. But dance is something that just kind of transcends time, cultures, genders, all of those things that we use to other ourselves. Dance can really erase those. And I don't think I actually said the name of the book, but I just looked it up, and it's Dance, the Sacred Art, The Joy of Movement as a Spiritual Practice by Cynthia Winton Henry. So that is one that I will be looking up. So one thing that kind of sparked my interest in this topic is I was listening to a book by Gloria Steinem that has nothing to do with the topic, but she was talking about this Native American woman that she'd met that was in a car accident, and they didn't think that she would be able to walk. And by the time Gloria met her, the accident had, you know, was years and years ago, and she had a leg brace that she didn't realize that she had on. And they were at a gathering with leaders of her tribe, and I actually think it was various tribes, but she didn't know, and there was dancing going on, and Gloria didn't know if this woman would be able to dance, but knew that it was such a, you know, deeply ingrained part of their culture as part of worship. And sure enough, she got up and was able to dance. And as I was listening to that, it was so beautiful to me because it's something that is as old as time. I mean, it's dance is something that connects us with the divine, and that's always connected us with the divine. And that's not to say that, you know, there's like a whole weird world of dance that I could see maybe why people would be uncomfortable with or whatever, you know, like there is some freaky stuff that goes on. but I think that at the core of it, I mean, it's how humans have worshiped for as long as we've worshipped. So, yeah, I'm excited to pick that book up. So you talked about dance connecting communities, and I've been interested to hear your perspective on, from you being a dance teacher. I did teach dance for a very short time to a bunch of six-year-olds that were, like, out of control. but... Oh, goodness, they were crazy. And I was like, why does anyone want anything to do with children?
They have so much energy.
I know. And I was in college. Yeah. I was in college, so I was running on like 4 hours of sleep each day. And it was crazy. But that's the only dancing teaching experience I've had. But I've wondered how it is to teach adults, to teach, I don't know if there's any men in the classes that you've taught. And I know that you've taught everything from, you know, Zumba to, well, I don't know what you've taught actually. A variety of things though, I know. But, talk about the community building aspect of that.
Absolutely. And I will throw in that I am literally bowing in your direction right now for having the patience to teach six-year-olds how to dance.
It was crazy. It almost did me in.
Oh, my goodness. It's amazing. And there's a reason why I teach adults. Because I get tired being in a dance studio watching dance teachers teach the kids, just sitting there watching them. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I cannot keep up. So as an adult teacher, I teach at Zumba. I teach adult jazz and adult ballet classes, and I have taught everything in between. I've taught hip hop. The one thing that my body just says, no, you probably should not teach is tap dancing. I love it. I love to be a participant, but that's just not something that, that I should teach. And all the people say, thank you for not doing that. But teaching adults is amazing. And I wanted to share two things. One, I received permission to talk about Peggy and about Beth. I love teaching adults who are in their later years of life, who are in their late 40s and on. And some of you are thinking, I'm in my late 40s. I don't feel like I'm in my later years of life. I mean, no offense to you. I'm just throwing out a number out there. I love being with those who have experienced life, who have already experienced the hesitations and worrying about judgment that they are now in the state of going, I really don't care what I look like. I'm just here because I want to be here. And being able to say, let's try something new. And they do so without the hesitation, as maybe somebody in their college years might go, I might look silly, so I'm going to hesitate. I love being able to share new expressions of dance and being able to invite people to find inspiration in that. So Peggy is a person who is in her late 50s, who as an adult became inspired by dance and said, I want to learn how to dance. So often, as you and I both shared, persons with a dance history started within their youth and took classes and performed and carried on, and some went to dance professionally, some became teachers, some stopped because life took over. But there are some people who have never had that ability, and Peggy was one of them. And she said, I am 59 years old. I've never learned how to dance ballet. I'm going to learn how to dance. And it is a joy being able to share with her basics that somebody else might consider basics, but to her, it is a new awakening of joy. And she's learning something that some people might say, geez, you know, I learned that 20 years ago. Here is this person who's just now learning it. But what I'm able to do as an instructor is to experience that joy of learning all over again. And that's one of the beautiful things about teaching, is that you experience the beginnings over and over and over again. And you experience how to connect different movements together. So it's an honor to be able to teach people like Peggy, who is saying, I'm in my later years of life. I just want to dance. I want to experience that freeness of movement. And then the other person I wanted to talk about, Beth. Beth is an individual who never was able to dance because of physical limitations. And I teach Zumba at an area that she goes. It's actually Curves. And I teach Zumba in the circuit there. And Beth experiences Curves as sort of physical therapy, if you will. It helps her to get stronger in her life and to recover from different physical limitations. And she always wanted to dance. And she comes and she watches the group that is there. And I've been able to experience just her watching dance and seeing her open up and her eyes just aglow. And I had an injury back in October, and I had to be on crutches for a while. And that was frustrating, and that's a whole nother story. But with that, I did not want to stop moving. I didn't want to stop dancing. So I started teaching from a chair, and I would go and I would teach Zumba sitting down to groups of people who were standing. And one of those occasions, I went to Curves, and I pulled up a chair with my crutches, and I said, I'm going to have to teach you sitting down. And Beth looked at me and she said, I never thought about dancing sitting down. And so she pulled up a chair next to me, and she has to move with a walker. And she put a walker next to the chair, and she started to get teary-eyed. And she said, this is the first time I've been able to dance. So it's amazing to teach those who, as adults, may have thought they never had the opportunity, or they didn't have the choice because of physical limitations, who are able to say, I can explore something new still, even though I am in my later years of life, or I've experienced all I have to experience. Oh, wait, now I can experience movement and experience the joy of music and how that connects us together.
How beautifully liberating. I mean, just thinking of picking up a new expression, a new way of life, because I really do think that dance changes how you interact with people, and just builds confidence and everything like that. So to be able to claim that later in life, whether it was just logistical reasons of limitation or just you didn't have the opportunity, how beautiful and how transformative. And I'm assuming that that has completely changed your life and outlook and purpose and sense of just purpose. I'm fascinated with that. And that sounds a lot better than teaching six-year-olds.
A lot less snot, I will have to say. Sometimes kids have a lot of snot, and then they wipe it on you. Adults, not so much.
It's true. And I don't know, kids are just crazy. I just remember, yeah, they're just nuts. It's like herding cats. You know, you finally get like three of them doing kind of what you want to do, and then the other three are bouncing off the wall, and there's loud music, so then they just all want to go nuts. And
yes. Yeah.
But to introduce a new sense of purpose into somebody's life who thought that maybe that ship had sailed, you know, I think that that is one of the most beautiful things and that a person could do for another person. That's well, that amazing.
It was definitely one of those times when Beth pulled up her chair next to me that I was in the state of mind where I'm like, don't cry. And trying to hold that back while I'm still, you know, shouting at people to go left or go right. And then the tears went over. But then I had to, of course, say, I have allergies. It's not you. So I didn't make her feel awkward. Because I wanted her to participate again. And I didn't want her to think that, you know, my sense of being moved by her realization that she could dance, even though she was sitting down. I didn't want her to be like, yep, weirdo, not trying that again.
You just sit there and cry.
Yes. I just got allergies.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So are you ready to move into like corporate formal worship, or is there more that you want to explore on a personal side?
I don't have anything jumping out at me right now. I do want to throw out there, though, a resource that Community of Christ has called the Body Spirituality Form of Spiritual Formation, and you can find that at seeofchrist.org/spiritualformation/bodyspirituality.asp. And what it is a spiritual practice of how to use your body, whether you are doing it as an individual or in a group setting. And it's a guided practice of movement and connecting with the spirit. And I love that we as Community of Christ have resources such as that to be able to use. And it connects with scripture and it connects with, words that help people to understand what it means to pray with the body and what it means to connect and to experiment with different prayer postures. So I wanted to throw that out so that anyone who is going, where can I find more information or where can I find something so that I can work on this at home, can look this up and start to practice the body spirituality guided spiritual practice.
Thank you for lifting that up. I don't think that I realized that was a resource, so I'm going to go look that up. One thing that I did want to bring up, I saw that you had posted on Facebook, you reposted a picture from, I think, a few years ago, of the foyer of the auditorium in Independence. And can you talk about that experience? You danced under the globe. I don't know if that was a moment of teaching for you or what that entailed, but I want to hear about it.
Absolutely. So that was during the time that I was able to go and to when I was working with the church in a full-time ministry position, I would get to travel to Independence and I would spend a week working in my office and then I would come back home until the next month. And while I was there, we would get together, employees would get together, and I had the joy of leading them in a version of Zumba that would allow us to de-stress and to connect together. And what we found at that time, the only space that was available for us to dance in was in that foyer. And when Chris Judd actually set it up for us, and she said, "I hope you don't mind. This is the only space that we have for you to dance in." And I went, "You do not have to apologize, because this is amazing."
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful to be able to dance in the foyer. And then those who were able, we would have anywhere at times from 4 people to 20 people. Employees would come after work and we would dance together and we would de-stress and we would find a way to just get rid of any negative environments or negative energies that were plaguing us. And we found that when we danced underneath that globe, let me throw a little disclaimer in there or a little bit of information about Zumba, if anyone is not familiar with it. Not only is it a dance fitness program based off of key Latin rhythms, it is actually an internationally based dance fitness program that embraces cultures and music from all over the place. So we found that when we danced underneath the globe, we were able to look up and to see the countries with which the music we were moving to came from. And it was beautiful, as we are a people who celebrate diversity and celebrate our international family, that we could say, "Oh my gosh, this song that we just danced to came from Spain," or "This song that we just danced to came from Africa." And here we are able to look up and to see the globe above us and to connect with them, even though they're not here with us in person. And the other amazing thing about that situation is there would be people that were walking past the foyer. They'd be walking past the glass door, and they would stop and look in at us. And some of them, I'm sure, were wondering, what in the world were we doing? And I'm sure some others were going, "Wow, I want to be a part of that." But we didn't acknowledge them because we were so wrapped up in the music and in the movement. But I said, what a beautiful example for them, for the public, to walk by and to not only see us dancing, but to see the diversity that we celebrate and to see the worth of all persons and to see how we are celebrating the sacredness of creation in that moment and all that we stand for as community of Christ. So it was an honor each time that we came together to dance in that foyer. And it's been one of those experiences that when I look back on it, I go, I wish I could do that again. And the time is present sometime, whenever that may be, I'll have that chance again.
Well, and I think just the rich history that building has, and all the people from coming in from World Conference every 3 years, just that diversity that is inherently in that building in general, and then to add level of diversity through song and dance is really beautiful. And the light in there is great, and that floor is great too. So
it's amazing. And the acoustics, because of that, because of the tile floor, the music just, we had small speakers, but that didn't stop the sound. It bounced everywhere and filled us in. But you are so right. Those walls have absorbed so much over the years. And putting on our imagination hats, if you will, if those walls could talk, I wonder what dances they would be able to share with us.
Beautiful. So what about incorporating dance into a more formal or corporate worship setting? Do you have experiences with that? I mean, I know that we've shied away from the 11 a.m. worship service, but is there a place for dance in the 11 a.m. worship service, whether that be a small spiritual practice or an actual performance?
Absolutely. All of the above. Being able to include dance into worship not only enriches the worship time, it helps to explore and explain the theme of the worship in unique ways that may connect with people differently than the spoken word. Some people, because we all respond differently to knowledge, either we are visual learners, or we learn best by hearing or doing, sometimes being together in a worship setting where everything is spoken may not be able to move us emotionally or spiritually as another form of worship, which dance could be. So sometimes we invite people to dance in their pews, to stand up, and whether it's clapping to a song, to a hymn, whether it is inviting them to move to music, or whether it is somebody sharing their gift of dance as a special ministry, is able to take the spoken word, is able to share the theme in a unique way that might speak to somebody differently. So one of the things I love is inside of Community of Christ Sings, song number 164 is actually, it's a Navajo prayer, but this is something that you can do in worship. It's called the Prayer of Peace. And the lyrics is peace before us, peace behind us, peace under our feet, peace within us, peace over us, let all around us be peace. And the lyrics continue with love, light, Christ, and then a moment of singing Alleluia. Something as simple as this, and inviting the congregation to move their arms forward when we sing peace before us, inviting them to reach out before them, or to reach back when we sing peace behind us, and to point down or to make a movement to say peace under our feet, to invite them to move with the song is a way to allow the community to worship together. It is a way to say, I'm not going to let you just sit there for an hour and zone out. If this is not speaking to you, let's find a way that speaks to you. And maybe they feel extremely uncomfortable. We used that word earlier. Maybe they feel uncomfortable moving their arms during the song, and maybe they prefer the spoken word. But in that moment, if we are able to say, we're doing this together, whether we feel awkward, whether we feel great, whether we're in the middle going, I really don't know what I feel right now, we're doing it together in community. And it takes worship from being an event or a performance and being a community time to experience God. So that is just one example. You mentioned about having someone perform. That is another way to experience dance during a gathering, a congregational gathering worship, to watch somebody share their gifts and talents. I remember growing up, there was a woman who just loved to share her gift of movement with a ribbon. And she was not a person that learned how to dance through a dance studio or had any type of training, but she felt that she could share joy and share passion with others by moving and twirling a ribbon during music. Now, as a kid, I looked at the ribbon like, yes, this sounds like something fun. I want to go run around with this ribbon outside. But now as an adult, I look back at that and I think, how beautiful. She may have felt uncomfortable or nervous, but she said, I want to share this with my congregation, with my family. And she would get up and a song would play and she would allow this ribbon to move during the worship. So there's all different ways that we can dance, or if there is somebody who is able to choreograph specific moves to a song, they might be able to share that during worship as well. It also allows time to let whatever was spoken to sink in. So being able to have different elements in worship, even if we are not able to process the spoken word, for those that are, having something visual like dance, or maybe listening to somebody sing a song, or even to just play an instrument, or even a moment of silence, allows that spoken word to sink in. It allows people to process what was shared. So having a choreographed dance, maybe fall after a sermon in worship, to have somebody reflect on the words that were shared and be able to find a sense of connectivity to that.
I love that you point out that people connect two different aspects of worship differently. The first example that you used with the Prayer for Peace song, we used it at our Mission Center's kids camp. I think for the last 2 years we've used it. And the kids this last year remembered it. And I thought that was interesting that they, you know, they didn't remember the material that we used in the classes or, you know, all sorts of elements of kids camp that they had just forgotten about. But they remember that song. And that was the only song that they remembered. Well, every kid remembers campfire songs, but part of campfire songs is dance. But it was that element of physical movement that helped them remember the words to the song. They remembered the experience, and it was a sacred moment. Not that like Gray Squirrel can't be sacred, but but it was one of those centering moments that when you get, you know, more than a dozen kids together, you don't think you're going to have these deep moments of reflection. But that song was able to foster one of those moments. So,
oh, I love it.
Yeah.
There is one thing I do want to mention, and we have to be very careful in our own personal judgment and hesitations of understanding what movement is, that we don't neglect to acknowledge how movement affects somebody, though it doesn't affect us in the same way. And that relates to music as well. And an example is, I have been in a setting where, as a participant or as an observer, I have been turned off by a particular song or particular movement because it didn't speak to me. But that didn't mean that it wasn't speaking to other people. And so I can't cancel that out as saying that is holy or that is a way to connect to the holy because it doesn't speak to me. Just as being in another setting where I might be able to say, this is the most amazing and profound moment of my life, somebody else might be going, nope, hate it. But yet we cannot judge others by saying, okay, so the ribbon dance may not move me. I may find this to be a little silly. We have to push that aside and try to unite ourselves and explore that diversity and maybe say, okay, so I'm not understanding why a ribbon is moving in the way that it's moving. It looks like something my 4-year-old would do, to saying, look at how that person is responding. Look at how they are experiencing the music. What emotions can we see in their body language? What can we see in their face? And try to connect in a different way.
I appreciate that you lifted that up. And maybe to kind of sort of relate from one dancer to another, I have a friend who is brilliant. I danced with her, but her ability and technique and creativity always excelled everyone around us. And she has danced with Juilliard, for Juilliard. She's taught there, etc. And her technique is solid. Everything about her dance is magnificent. But I've heard her talk, and the moments that she connects with God the most through dance are when she throws technique out the window and when she will just improv, and it doesn't look very pretty. I mean, you know, she'll have a beveled foot, or her knee will be turned in. Like, it's so fascinating to me that she can throw away technique, and that at the core of how she connects with God is just when she's like, she doesn't flop on the floor, I shouldn't say that, but kind of when she's flopping around. And it's amazing that is what makes her come alive. When I just think, you are such a skilled, trained, technical dancer who has taught and worked with such amazing choreographers that are, you know, state of the art in New York City and all these things. And she's just like, yeah, if I have a beveled foot, I have a beveled foot, and I love it. You know? And I just think she's crazy for it, but it's great. And, you know, it's, that's how she connects and just really lets loose. That's what she always talks about, is just letting loose. You have to get to the point where you can just let loose. And so if it's something like a physical prayer where you're swaying or something, and if you're swaying off rhythm, you know, that might drive me crazy. And it personally does a little bit, you know, but if that's how somebody's connecting to it, and it actually just reminded me of a experience just yesterday. I took my girls to their elementary school's production of The Lion King, and there was a moment. So we're talking like, you know, kids 10 and under who are doing this Broadway junior performance. And there's this part where the choir ensemble is dressed like grass. And so the front row is swaying to the right and to the left. And the second row is swaying to the left, to the right, and every other one. And there was this one kid that was so into it, but he was swaying the wrong way and it was throwing the whole line off. And it was so adorable. And then it was like all these little 6 to 8 year olds, whatever, who were just kind of like trying to nudge him. Like the girls on each side of him were trying to like nudge him in the right direction. But that kid was so into it. I mean, he was feeling it. And it just kind of made me laugh. And maybe he wouldn't consider that to be a God moment at this stage in his life, but he was so into the moment and just so, he was just experiencing it so deeply that it didn't matter that he was going the wrong way. And it made for an adorable show, but yeah.
I love it.
It was pretty cute.
that would totally be me. I would be that person that's just throwing everybody else off.
Oh, I have like this weird thing about rhythm. The other day, not to get too much of a sidetrack, but the other day my kids were listening to, I think it was the Trolls soundtrack, and they were just kind of going crazy. And I, just to be annoying, started clapping off rhythm just to see like if I would annoy them. And they didn't even get that I was clapping off rhythm. And I thought, oh my gosh, something's wrong here. Are you my children? They were in the moment, you know? It was great.
But yeah. You were just on the downbeat.
Yeah. Oh, like a quarter downbeat. I mean, I was off, you know? It was on purpose just to be that obnoxious parent, but they totally went over their heads.
Oh. Yeah.
They were in the moment, though. Well, this has been a great conversation. I don't know if we've explored everything that you would like to have explored, but like we've said, it's a huge topic that can cover all sorts of corners and avenues of a person's life and worship. But I think that we've covered some of the basics. I was going to ask, are there any other resources? We did name that book and then the online resource through the Spiritual Formation Center. But are there any other resources that you know of that if somebody's hesitant to start exploring some of these spiritual practices, maybe in their own life, that people could go to? Or, I mean, are there YouTube videos? I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff on YouTube and videos and things like that. Have you leaped into that world at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the internet is so vast with knowledge. It's right there at our fingertips. Please do not hesitate to search and to watch YouTube and to read what scholars have put out there for us to find and to acknowledge. There's also the Spiritual Disciplines Handbook, which is a resource that we within Community of Christ have used often in different leadership trainings and in different classes within ourselves too, and receive a lot of inspiration from. There is another book. I am literally standing here looking at my bookshelf right now, and I can't seem to find it, but it's called Learning to Pray with Your Body. I hope to find it to give you the information on it so that maybe we can share it in a note along with this recording. That is a wonderful resource as well. Really take time to find the mentors within your congregation or within the mission center or within the Community of Christ or even other cultures and other religions who have spent hours researching and who have spent time practicing, who are able to say if you are a person who learns best by doing, who will be able to sit and work with you to learn these practices, to go deeper. We are so blessed to have so much knowledge in so many different forms. Take a moment to find a way that speaks to you and to reach out. The questions that don't get answered are the ones that we never ask. So don't be afraid to ask. And whether it's with typing on a keyboard or asking in person, use that time to learn and to grow.
Thank you. I have really, really enjoyed this conversation. We will definitely keep in touch. And if you find out what the author information or whatever information that you have to share, I'd be interested in it. So.
Yes, I am still right now going through book by book trying to find it.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.